Session number 862, Major General Henry Learday, Reel 1.
General, how long have you actually lived in this house?
We've lived here now. We actually lived ourselves here for about 12 years, but the family have lived here for many years, of course.
Yes.
Since my...
Major General Learday, Reel 1. General, do you come from a military background?
Yes, I do. Most of my family have either served in the Army or the Navy. Many of them, of course, in the Indian Army of days gone by. My grandfather was an officer in the John Company's Navy and served in the Indian Mutiny and in the Persian Gulf, the Pigu War, and he afterwards became the Harbour Master of Liverpool when he retired from the Navy. And he was there for 32 years. That is why I happened to be born in Liverpool, because my father was there at the time, working in an insurance broker's office. And my father was a very keen territorial soldier and started his career in 1899 as a subaltern in the Lancashire Volunteer Artillery. He was considered too young to be sent out to South Africa. But my great-grandfather served in the Madras Army and served under, it was very longevity in the family. He was the youngest son of a second marriage, as was my grandfather. As fun enough was my father. My grandfather was born in 1834, and my great-grandfather served as an ensign in the Madras Army at the age, I think, of 17, under Wellesley in the 1803, I think, Maratha Wars. So we got a lot of service connections. The gentleman on the wall there is a Marine who was commanding Marine Battalion in the storming of, or going ashore in Java, was killed in action commanding in 1797, I think. So we've had a lot of contacts. Another chap up there, and so on. So we do come of a military family, although in fact my father wasn't in fact a regular soldier. He was an insurance broker turned territorial. And he went through the First World War, of course, commanding a battery of Royal Garrison Artillery, the County Palatine Battery, 125th Heavy Battery, raised and paid for by Lord Derby. And he knew Lord Derby, and Lord Derby was very keen to have him as a CO, and he took this battery out to France and went through the Somme and other battles, got his DSO at High Wood in 1916, summer of 1916. And then he went on the staff after that, and was on the staff of the Australian Corps, Heavy Artillery, as the G2, and then later was a G2 and I think a G1 in the 13 Corps, at the end of the war. After that he went on soldiering, territorial soldiering, and went as commanding officer of the 106th Lancashire Hussars Yeomanry, Field Brigade, as they were called in those days, to which I joined as a second lieutenant because I was employed in his office in London, in Liverpool, after I left school. And I did 3 years, I think it was, in the Territorial Gunners, always very keen to be a regular soldier. My father against it at first because he thought I would do better for myself in those days of peace in civil life in his firm. But I hated that, and in the end he agreed that I should go into the regular army, and I went to a crammer, eventually did the Sandhurst exam and did the passing out from Sandhurst, which was the thing the territorial officers did, and finally was commissioned into the Royal Tank Corps. I had originally wanted to go into the Royal Artillery, but at that time they didn't take, this was the year 1927, they didn't take officers from the territorials or the supplementary reserve into the gunners. But I was very keen to be a tanker because I was a great man in those days on motor cars and things all connected. And due to the fact that I had a friend of mine I was his fag at school, who was already in the Corps, I wrote to him and asked him what it was like, and he said it was the thing to do, so I put in for the Royal Tank Corps. And my father wrote to Lord Derby, who was then the Army, who was then the Secretary of State for War, and asked him if he could do, and he wrote back and said there was no doubt that if I passed the examination, I would get in the Royal Tank Corps. And that I did. I was commissioned on the 27th of October, 1927, which is my 21st birthday.
Did your father talk about the Tank Corps at all?
Not at all, no. He was really, I wouldn't say anti it exactly, but he thought that anything had to be connected with horses, as so many other officers in the army did in those days. We'd been, of course, horsed as a yeomanry regiment. And the last camp I attended, we were actually mechanised. It was the most extraordinary mechanisation. We were given Fordson plough tractors, Fordson tractors to tow the guns. The men all disliked it very much. And they were very dangerous because they didn't pull very well and they sat back on their tails and got people under them and so on. This was the last thing I did in the Territorial Army before I went to the Irregulars. My father, I don't think he objected to me going in the Royal Tank Corps, but he would have liked me to be a gunner, and I would like to have been a gunner, really, if I could have been.
Those exercises you're referring to, did you come into contact with the Tank Corps at that time?
Not at all. I'd had no contact with the Tank Corps at all, except through this man, General Foote, who afterwards became one of our very famous officers, got a VC, and is still a great friend of mine and lives near the next village to me. No, I had no contact with the Royal Tank Corps at all until I joined it. But I found it very pleasant, and they were very nice to me, and I liked it very much.
Where would you say, then, you'd heard about it?
Well, only rarely through Foote. And also, I think generally, that one heard about tanks and so on. I had to go and do a regular attachment as a territorial officer to a regular battalion. I went to the 2nd Battalion in Aldershot, Farnborough, to do that before I was commissioned. And I did 6 weeks with them as a territorial officer. I was still a gunner in those days. And then I was commissioned into the regular army after I'd passed out of Sandhurst.
What were you doing when you visited him for 6 weeks?
Oh, well, I was just... I can't really remember really. I spent most of my time hunting, actually. It was in the winter time, and I was a keen horseman. And they had horses in those days. I used to go out of the Aldershot Drag and the Garth and these various hunts. And that is, I think, most of what I did. I went down to Lulworth on the tanks. I drove all the way, rode down from Farnborough to Lulworth. It used to take 2 days to do that. Otherwise, I didn't do very much tanking, actually.
What tanks would they be?
They were the... we had the Mark I Vickers tank in 2nd Battalion. And the Mark I A, I think. They were the same tanks, of course, when I joined again as a regular soldier.
The examination you referred to, was that specifically for the Tank Corps?
No. This was the ordinary passing out examination at Sandhurst, which all the gentlemen cadets at Sandhurst did. And one had to, as a territorial officer, go to Sandhurst for a short period and take the same examination, practical and written examination, that they did. And it was a difficult thing to do because they'd been there for 18 months. We had only been there for a very short time, I forget exactly how long, and also been to a crammer. I was lucky in that I actually managed to pass out top of the officers who were going for the Territorial Army. So I got my first choice anyway, without any assistance from Lord Derby.
At Sandhurst, you didn't do the Sandhurst exam, yes. When you got through that and you went to Bovington,
yes.
What did you find in terms of training? Did that help you?
Oh, yes. I did know a bit about motor cars before I ever went there. And I had, of course, been 6 weeks with a regular battalion, so I knew rather more than the ordinary cadet from Sandhurst. I actually spent 3 months in the battalion before I went on my courses. I joined in October, and I didn't actually go on my courses till February when the first course started. And I went with a batch of young officers from Sandhurst who were, in fact, junior to me, because they were the passing out party in I think it was January 1928. And we did 3 months gunnery course and 3 months driving maintenance course, and a short period at the depot to learn about being tankers to start with.
What did the gunnery course consist of?
Oh, well, in those days you had the 3-pounder gun, which was the gun in the Mark I light tank. It was called the light Vickers tank, actually. Although it was the only tank we had. You had that three-pounder. You had the Hotchkiss machine gun and the Vickers machine gun. We had a Vickers gun mounted in the tank coaxially with the main armament. And so we had guns on each side of the tank, which were the Hotchkiss, which was the infantry, the cavalry machine gun. And so you learnt those three weapons and, of course, the pistol. You also did a certain amount of rifle firing. And you learnt what theory there is attached to tank gun range, that sort of thing, and a good deal of drill, gun drill and tank drill generally, and so on. Whereas the driving and maintenance course, you covered the tank, this tank. We were still doing the old wartime tank, which we spent, I think, a fortnight on. There was still some in the service when I first joined.
The Mark V, isn't it?
Well, actually, I think I'm right in saying it was a higher Mark V, 3 stars. I don't know, can't remember exactly. And then we also did armoured cars. We covered the old Peerless, which was a 1914 vehicle with solid tyres and very, very slow, a lorry engine. And we covered the Rolls-Royce, the 1921 and the 1924 Rolls, which were, in those days, very, very high-class cars. They were on ordinary Rolls 40-50 chassis, and they were very beautiful cars. Whether they were very good armoured cars, I wouldn't like to say, but they were excellent motor cars. And we used to have great fun going out with these cars, four officers and an instructor, for the day, during driving instruction. And you used to take the cars many miles, and it was great fun driving on rails. And even with the heavy weight of the body and everything, they were still extremely good motor cars, went very well. I never served with them again, although I saw them in India. One of the companies in India had them, and they had them in Egypt too.
On the tank, did you have to strip it down?
Yes, you had to learn the whole, you did the whole thing. You learnt the tank from beginning to end, as far as the mechanical side was concerned, and you took part in the operations of removing all the various engine, the parts, driving, gear, the drives and gearbox, everything else, and took it all to pieces and put it all together again. Which, of course, one doesn't do now at all in under those conditions. I mean, this was really the sort of work that a Remy does now. But we were very well versed in our driving maintenance. We really knew as much as the men did. Certainly hadn't the experience, maybe, but we had certainly the knowledge. So that one could command one section, and if something went wrong with the tank, you probably knew what was wrong with it. This was very good, I think.
Who was instructing you?
Well, we had sergeant instructors for each squad, and I think I'm right in saying a squad was 4 or maybe 5 young officers. And then you had an officer over each section, I think there were 4 or 5 of these squads with an officer over them, who was a driving and maintenance instructor, having done the driving and maintenance instructors course. In my case, it was a man called Keller, Captain Keller, I think I'm right in saying. Not sure, yes, I think so.
How big an establishment was Bovington at that time?
Well, it was only Royal Tank Corps in those days, of course. It was the depot, which usually was something about 1,000 strong, had 400 or 500 recruits in it. And then there was the driving and maintenance school. And then there was the Royal Tank Corps headquarters centre, centre headquarters. The driving and maintenance school probably had, some hundreds of men under instruction at any one time. Both instructors' courses and a lot of the recruits used to pass through this. And then down at Lulworth was the gunnery school, which was under the headquarters of the centre at Bovington. And they taught the gunnery and the firing, all the firing was carried out there. And there again, you had instructors' courses and young officers' courses like I did after I'd done the DNM. And then you had recruits going down there for training and gunnery, so they, when they joined their regiments, they had been in the tank and fired the guns and so on.
That firing you mentioned, was it live ammunition?
Oh, yes. Well, yes, it was live. Of course, we didn't have HE in those days from our guns. They were all solid shot from the main armament. And it wasn't until much later we had any HE. And we also had course, machine guns with tracer and that sort of thing. It was fairly modern, both the Vickers and the old Hotchkiss.
At the 2nd Battalion Farnborough, to which you were posted, how did you find the routine as a section officer?
Well, I was a very keen soldier, otherwise I wouldn't have been in the army. But at times it used to pall rather. We were limited, of course, in the amount of mileage we could do because of the wear on the tracks particularly. and they were very expensive. So during the winter, when you were doing individual training, there was very little tanking, and you spent an awful lot of your time standing about in the hangar watching the men do maintenance or under instruction. You didn't actually do much of the instruction yourself. That was nearly all done for you by non-commissioned officers who were all instructors by trade. But one spent a great deal of one's time being very ceremonial, marching about, being orderly officer and all the rest of it, commanding officer's orders, and, we were all dressed up in our best clothes half the time. We put our overalls on over our uniforms, took them off again after and so on. And one did a good deal of riding. We had 12 horses in the battalion, and anyone who was keen had what was known as a 15 bobber. In those days, you hired a horse from the cavalry. And I think I had two, and we used to go out a lot riding, which was supposed to be good for reconnaissance and the eye for country and this sort of thing. And also, of course, we used to hunt with the local hunt, both the drag, which was the old drag, and also with the garth was the one we used to go out in.
You mentioned then that people considered it was good to have horses for reconnaissance. Mm. That was an official line, was it?
Oh, yes. When I first joined, we used to carry our horses round with us in lorries. And one was, in many cases, people were expected to get out of their tanks onto horse and go out and do reconnaissance. The horse died very hard in the army, you know. And even in the Corps, which was at that time the only really mechanized organization in the army, the senior officers had all been gunners or cavalrymen and so on, and they all still were keen on horses and thought that the young officer who showed advantage in horses was a good thing. Of course, we also used to play an enormous amount of games in the army, and in my regiment particularly. We played rugby. We were a great cross-country running team. We also had a good rugby side. And games were every afternoon. I mean, I don't think they were exactly compulsory, but it was voluntary compulsory, as you might say. And the runs, the cross-country runs, were compulsory for all under the age of 30. And you turned out twice a week and ran out across the country somewhere, Norris Bridge or somewhere like that, the adjutant chasing behind on a horse.
If I may return just to this business of horses, would you say that reflected that attitude, a divergence between the senior officers and the more junior regimental ones like yourself?
To some extent, yes. I don't think the horse was really a great problem in the Royal Tank Corps, actually. We, in my battalion, when I joined, we had a chap, a colonel, who was very keen in riding, and many of us liked it very much in those days, and rode. But I don't think we ever felt it was anything to do with the army, really. It was one of the perks. It wasn't like the cavalry or the gunners, where the horse was the guard of all things, and if your horses were clean and smart and well looked after and so on, then what happened to your guns and things of this sort wasn't nearly so important. In our side, of course, the thing was that our vehicles mattered most, and the horses were really very largely a form of exercise and amusement.
So socially you had contact then with cavalry regiments, did you? Cavalrymen?
Yes, I think so. We didn't have a great deal of that sort of thing, because, of course, we lived in this rather funny thing. We were in all-shot command. I think I'm right in saying, but I can't remember exactly. We were part of 2nd Division, I believe. But we lived at Farnborough. We were in Pinehurst Barracks, which were on the side of the RAE Farnborough airfield, in old aeroplane hangars, our tanks. And we therefore were rather divorced in some ways from the rest of the garrison. We had many contacts, and we trained quite a lot with infantry, but I don't remember us ever training with cavalry that I can remember.
What was your training programme?
Well, of course, all through the winter, one did individual training, and training the men up to the various trade test standards, diver mechanic and so on, remembering that we had no REME in those days, that ordnance only did major overhauls in the background in what were called field stores in Aldershot. And we did all our own fitters work was all done by the Royal Tank Corps. We had fitters ranks and driver mechanics who were men who had good drivers who were allowed to do quite a lot of maintenance on the vehicles, which now, of course, they're not allowed to do at all, I understand. So we were we kept the vehicles in very high standard, I think.
What about tactical training?
Well, there again, we were limited because of the ground. We did a fair amount of damage, even with these quite lightish tanks. I think they only weighed about, I forget exactly what they did, weigh about 12 tons, I think. But we had certain training areas down on Laffin's Plain and along by Norris Bridge, the back of the airfield and so on, where we used to go out. And we used to do section and subsection training. And the battalion never trained as a battalion in those days until it went off for manoeuvres. We went on manoeuvres in 1928. The big Aldershot manoeuvres were held in Sussex. And then we trained. We did, in fact, train as a battalion.
But when you trained as a section, what kind of things were you doing?
We're always taking up fire positions and always dealing with enemy tanks and enemy infantry, that sort of thing. We had very little to do with anti-tank guns because there were very few anti-tank guns in those days. And the worry was field artillery. You see, that was what had caused the tank casualties in the First World War. The Germans had the anti-tank rifles, but they were not of much value. And the way the tanks were all knocked out was, of course, a question very largely of field artillery being used in the anti-tank role. And this was the thing we used to train about, how to deal with batteries, that sort of thing. It was all fairly elementary.
You were also working on the idea that other tanks would be a problem.
Oh, yes, we always had in mind that we'd have other tanks against us, and we used to have Squadron V Squadron in operations, particularly later on when we came to the army manoeuvres in Sussex and so on. We had our own battalion was divided between the two divisions and our tanks attacked each other.
Were you given yourself any instruction about tactics by senior officers?
Yes, we used to have instructional periods, both for officers and for officers and NCOs, in which we used to do little exercises on the sand table and that sort of thing, all rather elementary, because, of course, the tactics of tank battles had not really been come out yet, in that we were still thinking very largely of the First World War, and the only advantage we had was our tanks were slightly faster, was all. And they still thought of what went on at Cambrai and the 8th of August 1918, when the Whippets went over the Hindenburg Line and so on. And therefore, our training was very elementary compared with what we did later.
Coming back just to that tank versus tank, what would you say was the result of that sort of exercise?
Well, it was always very hard to say. The umpires were always quite foxed as to what, in fact, had happened. Everybody claimed everybody else, and it was usually a sort of agreement between us that everybody went back to the start again. It was very hard to tell what, in fact, had happened. We had blank ammunition. We fired and made clouds of white smoke, which was very unrealistic. And we used to claim that we'd knocked them out, and they always claimed they'd knocked us out, and nobody could really decide. But the training was quite reasonably good. I mean, it gave everybody a chance to manoeuvre.
You mentioned that the memories of Cambrai and 1918 were there. Were there a lot of First World War veterans with you at the time?
Yes, all the senior officers had been in the First World War, not necessarily in the tanks by any means. But my section commander, I remember, had been in the tank corps. We had a large number of senior officers from other corps, including quite a large number from Irish, disbanded Irish infantry regiments who came to the tank corps. Some very good, some not so good, and one or two pretty bad.
In what way were they not so good, would you say?
Well, they were time servers. They had come into the tank corps because that was the only place they could go after their infantry regiments, like the Munster Fusiliers and the Royal Dublin Fusiliers and so on, had been disbanded. They didn't want to go out of the army, and there was an offer to fill up vacancies in the tanks who were expanding. These chaps came along. Many of them had very little interest in it, really. My own section commander when I first joined was an old Munster fusilier, and he hardly ever went near a tank if he could possibly avoid it, and the work was left entirely to the young second lieutenants and very excellent non-commissioned officers, of which we had a very high standard indeed.
But he wouldn't have much idea of what mechanically was going on, did he?
Oh, none whatever. Mechanics certainly not. We had some years in the Royal Tank Corps of this trouble, and these were gradually eliminated very largely by the great General Hubbard, who combed through the officers very carefully, and a lot of the ones who were really not much good were removed.
Did you, as a young, keen man, resent these people?
Oh, I don't think one ever resented them, no. I don't think one thought of that, really. I think one thought they were rather useless at times. But I had a very fine company commander. He hadn't been a tank officer, but he'd been an infantry officer, the Highland Light Infantry. And he was a very, very clever, sensible, excellent officer. And he was a wonderfully good company commander and brought our company on splendidly in training and had thoughts of how tanks would operate and so on, although he hadn't had any actual battle experience of that.
What equipment did you have, in fact, at this time?
Well, all the time I was talking on, before I went to India, we in the 2nd Battalion had the Mark I Light Vickers tank. The other battalions, that was the 2nd, 3rd and 5th, who were the tank brigade, they all had the Mark II, which was a somewhat improvement on the same tank. But of course, they were hardly battle-worthy. They had very thin armour, about 14 millimetres. They had this 3-pounder gun, which was really a very low velocity compared with the ones we used in the last war. They were mechanically somewhat unreliable, even with a good crew, which had worked on the same tank for a long time and finally got to know it very well, and everything could have gone wrong with this, had gone wrong and been put right. Even then, they were a bit unreliable. I mean, for instance, we marched down to Sussex, and I think we were the only company that got there complete. We did get there. But the tanks were... They were the first try at quite a good try, at a mobile tank, as opposed to the one of the First World War, whose maximum speed was about 3 miles an hour. We could go up to 15 and had good road performance, could get along quite well on the road, but and they weren't very difficult to drive, but from the back...